Greetings, travelers.
Greetings, travelers. It is Mythical Mahatch.
Wow.
Yeah, that just happened.
I'm stunned. I'm speechless. Oh my
You
gosh.
should be, actually, as everyone was after we talked at the Georgia Bigfoot Festival this
Oh
last
my
weekend.
gosh. Yes, we had so much fun at that. We were the post-lunch entertainment.
Yes, we were. Actually, we were the post-post-lunch entertainment
Right, because
because.
we got to go on right after the man himself, the legend, Don Meldrum. So, which
Yeah.
was pretty epic. The man who found the Sierra Sounds and all that, and he was there. And then we were the guys after him. So
We were the plucky comic relief right after. So we went to the Georgia Bigfoot Festival, which was like a 1.5 day, do we
yeah,
want
kind
to
of
call
thing.
it?
Yeah, they had a VIP night and then a regular day, which was kind of, the VIP night was kind of relaxed and groovy, and we had a lot of fun. That was when we set up, and they had a few of the guests, and they did a Bigfoot roundtable. And then the next day was the main festival.
Yeah, which
And
is at the Dillard House in Dillard, Georgia.
Dillard, Georgia.
Yeah, Dillard. As I'm saying this, kind of wondering, because you did all the driving, so I just got to. We did hit Yamer Farms on
Yes, we love
little travel.
Yamer.
We hit Yamer Farms on Friday, and I got boiled peanuts, which I am such a big fan of boiled peanuts. So,
And you're gluten free right now, but I got to have some of their wonderful sandwiches. They do.
Oh, they do.
Oh my gosh, the
I got their
multi-grain right
barbecue though.
there.
Barbecue and pickles. It was an option.
Yeah,
Big
that's their
giant bowl of
gluten-free
barbecue and
option.
pickles.
Their gluten-free option, a cup of barbecue meat and pickles. So
Yeah, it
think
was
of that.
pretty amazeballs. But yeah, we had a lot of fun and we got to meet some of our fans, came out to see us, which was
Yep.
really,
We
really
had a
cool.
couple travelers come out, which was very nice. And then we got hopefully a lot of new listeners from that. So if you're all joining us for the first time, welcome.
Welcome,
And
welcome.
yeah.
And
Greetings, travelers.
we had a weird thing happen before we get into this really epic episode. So I just want to highlight, because this was weird for both me and Mark. So they set up this thing where people could have lunch with any of the speakers that they wanted to have lunch with. So
Right.
they put us at Bo's face, if you guys could see it, which you can't. So they put us at this table, and it was me, Mark, and Carrie, who was there. And then I think we were like, okay, this is neat. And then we realized sitting down, it was like a little sort of awkward, because it was
Yes.
like, what are we supposed to do? Like, we don't know these people. We're going to sit down and eat lunch with these
And they could ask us
people.
questions and things like that. And we were like, okay. And I guess we were originally going to be just at the small table, but then a couple groups had requested us. They had to move us to the big table. And I think if this had happened after the talk, I think we would have probably had an even bigger table, because we had
Yes.
a very good response to our talk, which was telling some holler monster stories,
Which
which
was
is what
really
we always
fun,
love to
because
do.
there was only one mic between us. So I had to like grab the mic from Mark's hand to interject things. But it was a ton of fun. It was a nice little festival. It's one of the smaller festivals, but it's very personal. We
Big
got to
crowd.
meet some people that had amazing things. Bo, I didn't show this to you, but I got this for a friend. It is a giant Bigfoot pillow with palms on it that looks like a Bigfoot foot. It's
Yep.
funny. And Carrie got one of those
Carrie
too.
got one,
So
and it's now her crochet. It holds perfectly in her lap. She can put all her crochet on it, and it's a giant Bigfoot print, and
yeah.
it's adorable. We got to meet a couple other vendors. I got a nice Flatwoods monster ornament from one of the vendors, and it was really cool, fun little event. We posted some of those videos on our social medias, so feel free to
Yes.
check them out. And we are looking forward to the North Carolina Bigfoot Festival in October, which we have been announced as keynote speakers.
Yes. I
Well,
don't know if you heard that, Bo, but we are the keynote speakers for the North Carolina Bigfoot Festival. It was all about my retelling of the Boojum, which we'll
yes.
do in a future episode. But I feel like the entire catalyst had nothing to do with Mark's amazing stories, but just Erica's romantic ideology of the Boojum story.
Yep. And then I had to retell a spooky version of Spearfinger. We talked about Spearfinger in the past,
Yeah.
but I've learned some newer stuff. So we're going to have to revisit that, because I was able to bring some of that up at this.
and throw me completely off because he didn't tell me about
it. Erica thought I was going to tell the old one.
I thought that Mark was maybe like drunk or something and he doesn't drink. I'm like, what is happening? He's telling this new story. And I'm like, not that we ever rehearse. So just clarify this. We do not rehearse because we're not able to rehearse. Like even if we did rehearse, that wouldn't be what came out of our mouths. So we just go over what we're going to talk about. Yeah. And Mark starts talking and I'm like, what the F is he saying? Like, he's making up shit. It was fine. Yeah.
That stuff I had researched for our next book, the Eerie Travels Smoky Mountains book. So it was a lot of fun.
Okay.
But,
so what are we talking about today though, Mark?
Okay. Well, we talked about Halloween legends back in the day. And since this is Mythical March, we want to talk about an American myth, right? And probably one of America's first ghost stories, right?
Yes.
And that is the infamous Washington Irving Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Ooh.
And now it's normally kind of a Halloween story, right? He's got the pumpkin head. He's got all that. So we were going to save this for Halloween, but I thought Mythical March, this fits, right?
Yes.
Because it is based on some truth as well as a lot of myth. And so we are going to do a deep dive into this. And then in the back half, after we do a little bit more of Washington Irving's story, we are going to dig into a real Headless Horseman. That some of you may know and a lot of people don't, but I think it's amazing. So we'll be talking about that a little bit today too. So we're gear up that Wayback Machine. Did we got it cleaned out after the last trip?
Actually, we didn't, but I'm used to the smell now, so it's fine. Right. Let's get back in it.
That Flatwoods Monster air freshener I got.
Because everything needs to smell like a Flatwoods Monster. Anyone want to guess what that smells like?
Sulfur. All right, it's perfect. So first things first. So Washington Irving's tale, right?
Yes.
1820s. A headless horseman terrorizes a town called Sleepy Hollow. Is it real? Yes. Sleepy Hollow is a real town and it surprises many people that you can go visit it. And
where is Sleepy Hollow located, Mark, for those travelers that maybe want to join?
All right. Well, Sleepy Hollow is in the Catskills. And I'm going to pull up real quick exactly where in the Catskills just so I can get it right, because otherwise I'm going to get some grief for this. But the real Sleepy Hollow is just a little north of New York City.
Oh, cool. So you go to New York City and then just take a little jaunt up there.
Yep. So New York City. So just a little north of there. And it is in the Catskills. Now, a lot of people don't realize this about the Catskills. And I honestly didn't realize this about the Catskills. The Catskills are a subrange of the Appalachians.
Oh.
So that makes this a holler monster story.
Oh, so, I like it. We pulled it into holler monsters. Holla.
Yep. Now, somewhere between 1819 and 1820, no one knows the exact publication date of this, the story of Ichabod Crane. He's a Yankee school teacher, right? And then he's enchanted by two things.
Okay.
Katrina Von Tassel and scary stories, right? So, likes the pretty girl in town. And he likes spooky stories. And now there's this great thing in the story that Washington Irving, now he is a master of the English language. So definitely please read the original. One of my favorite quotes is, "A drowsy, dreamy influence seems to hang over the land and pervade the very atmosphere.
Ooh.
It is, the place still continues under the sway of some witching power that holds a spell over the mind of the good people, causing them to walk in a continual reverie." How does that not pull up haunting images, right?
It does, because I often walk with a haunting reverie. I'm just going to throw that out there. That's a thing. That's a thing that happens.
So Irving walks home every night, and he's listening to these stories in the town. And one of the tales involves a headless horseman who is menacingly described as the commander-in-chief of all the powers of the air.
Oh.
Basically, he's haunted by this. And one night he has an encounter with this apparition. And that's the famous story, right? He runs to the bridge. He tries to get across the bridge and he's never seen again. And there are several characters. He has a rival for Katrina Von Tassel, a guy named Strom Bones, who's a big bully. Yeah, it's literature, it's history, it's folklore. And he's drawing on poems and other tales from all over the world, as well as Revolutionary War accounts, which are still fairly fresh in everybody's minds. Remember, this is not that long.
Yeah.
So the real story is, well, let's get into it. Ready? So we're going to take the Wayback Machine again, and we're going a little further back. And this time we're going to go to 1796. And there is a poem there from Sir Walter Scott. And it's basically his translation of a German poem called The Chase. And the German poem is actually The Wild Huntsman by Gottfried Berger. And that is based on the Norse mythology of the Wild Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, Irving had become friends with Scott in 1817. So that is very likely his mentor, right? And his friend. So that's why he knows this poem. And the poem is about a wicked hunter who is doomed to hunt forever. And he's chased forever by the devil and the dogs of hell for punishments of his crimes as he lived.
Like you do.
Now, what happens next is he's inspired by this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he brings it back to America. But we've got this big moment that happens. So the Headless Horseman on his phantom steed, right? We've got famous characters all throughout history that have been, you know, labeled with this and everything. And he is ubiquitous. But back then, this was kind of a new thing in American folklore. He hadn't really been done. But the story of the ghost of the Headless Horseman goes back to a Hessian trooper whose head was carried off by a cannonball in some nameless battle of the Revolutionary War. That's Irving's version of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not an invention. That really happened. Unless you're a history buff, the term Hessian mercenary probably does not sound real. Yeah, right? It sounds like something invented as well.
Well, that's what they said in the movie, right? Was the Hessian character, right?
The Hessian mercenary, yep, that was hunted down and killed. Now, what the Hessians were, was they were German auxiliary forces used by the British during the occupation of America's colonies and during the Revolutionary War. And Britain relied heavily on them to bolster their forces. And they were really known for their discipline and that they were very, very powerful on the field. And the American troops hated them. Right? Yeah. They were bloodthirsty. They were marauders. They killed for money. Yeah, how could you possibly deal with these people on a human level? They're even noted in the Declaration of Independence as an example of King George's tyrannical ruling.
Well, I mean, they may be accurate in that statement.
So there were 30,000 of them, and they played pivotal roles in a lot of the major engagements. Battles of Bennington, Long Island, and then, of course, Trenton. And the reason we know about them from Trenton is our boy George Washington famously led troops across the icy Delaware River on Christmas.
Yeah.
To slit the throats of a bunch of Hessians to keep them from fighting him in the coming battle. So don't mess with America. We will sneak across an icy river in the middle of the night and slice your throats. So like, we've done it.
Grown adults do. What's really interesting is I think a lot of people don't realize that there were tactics that were never done previously in war, right?
Right.
it's, I don't know. For me, it's very interesting because like people, they used to come out, they'd stand in front of each other. They like, there was like a decorum, a required, like a gentleman's decorum for war. Yep. And you look back on it and think, how the hell they'd march across fields to each other. We would never do that now. Like we would never do some of the stuff that they did.
Different technique. But back then that was how you did it. So we're actually going to go back. So 1776, again, Wayback Machine's getting a workout this time. Washington's army basically suffered a crushing defeat in the Battle of Long Island. And they were in full retreat. He's like, we've got to build a defense. We got to find a place because otherwise they're going to just march over us and kill us.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the British weren't ready for it. So they sent their Hessians after them. And so he builds a defense in an area called White Plains, which is a small settlement just north of Manhattan.
Okay.
And now we're on Halloween, right? Night before Halloween. And the American forces fight some British and a lot of Hessian soldiers. And the Hessians are at the spear tip, right? They are charging in, leading the assault. And several hours of fighting, and Washington troops are being overrun and they're fleeing again. And we lose about 50 more soldiers, which at that point we were already pretty much done. And yeah. As they're fleeing, this one guy was leading a group of artillerymen. And I want to say is Lieutenant Fenno, I think is who's this comes from.
Okay.
And he was leading a lone artillery battery on top of the hill, which is just some cannons, right? Overlooking White Plains. And he fired a single cannonball at the Hessian troops that were chasing Washington's troops.
Okay.
And he fires that cannonball and decapitates one of the soldiers and kills a horse. And it causes basically the Hessians to fall apart and run away. So saving.
Wow. I suppose seeing somebody beheaded next to you would have that effect, right?
Yeah, from one cannon, you know, right in front of you, it was enough to turn the tide. There is a small stone there that marks the spot where the Hessian lost his head, and it's 8 miles away from the current town of Sleepy Hollow.
Okay.
Now there's a historical marker there that was dedicated long after Legend of Sleepy Hollow, of course. So there was no 100% reference to that in the book, but come on, it happened right there. It has to be, that's where our guy comes from, right? That is the guy who made this iconic character. Now it's been over 200 years since the story came out and people all go to Sleepy Hollow. They usually have about 200,000 tourists a year come there to retrace the steps. Now we're getting into the main characters, right?
Yes.
So Ichabod Crane, that's our main man. That's our hero. He's the school teacher in town, right? The reason we know about this guy is, so the town of Tarrytown.
Okay.
Which is just, again, near New York. That's where Irving is sent to live at the age of 15. And that's because New York City is infested with yellow fever.
Oh,
at this point.
Yikes.
So this is, you know, 1790, late 1790, 1798, 1799, somewhere in there. And they were, you know, his family's wealthy enough to get out of the city and get up here to Hudson Valley. And that's where he's just living in the Catskills. And he's describing that witching effect in his book and all this. And now Ichabod Crane, now his quote for that, one might have mistaken for some scarecrow eloped from a cornfield. Now, this is supposedly inspired by a guy named Jesse Merwin, who is a friend of the author and also a friend of another guy named Martin Van Buren, who becomes our 8th president. And he was a teacher from upstate New York. And he basically was a friend of him and stayed with Irving back in the day. Now, there is another character from this time period, a guy named an actual school teacher in Tarrytown named Samuel Youngs. and he was a lieutenant, and he was friends with a family called the Van Tassels. Hey, which is another name that appears in this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of close that basically he's a combination of these two guys, we think. Now, Katrina Von Tassel, Ichabod's unrequited love, was basically based on, again, somebody Irving knew. And they believe it was Eleanor Van Tassel, but perhaps someone else. But Eleanor Van Tassel is someone that Irving, we think, had a crush on. So the Van Tassels have, in Irving's story, the Van Tassels have money, but we think he just basically got the name from a tombstone or two and knew the family name and all that. But epidemic, they're all forced to flee to this town, and that's where he gets the inspiration. And he hears that story, and he hears about the Headless Horseman. He hears about the Hessian, and that becomes one of the greatest ghost stories of all time. And it inspires him because he's also inspired by Dutch history and other local lore and all this other stuff. And then we start looking into that, and that's when we discover there's so many Headless Horsemen throughout the world. And we will talk about that after we come back. Eerie Appalachia. Gear up for a frightful jaunt into the darkest reaches of the ancient Appalachians. Folks deep within the Appalachian hollers, lean close to the campfire to share stories of the inexplicable with hushed awe. Monsters rumbling in the hills, strange lights darting through the pitch black night sky, horrible occurrences almost ineffable in their bizarre tragedy. Tall tales, you might say. Tell that to the Flatwoods Monster in Braxton County, West Virginia, or the Goat Man of Louisville. Look into his humanoid eyes and let him know you don't believe. And what of those apparitions in Mammoth Cave's Corpse Rock, or the Satan spawn known as the Jersey Devil? How do you respond when confronted by these mysteries? From the metaphysical energy that swirls near Serpent Mound in Ohio, to Point Pleasant's Mothman legacy, Mark Muncy and Carrie Schultz explore the dark history lurking in the shadows of Appalachia. Read by Mark Muncy, author and experts on strange folklore with appearances on shows such as Ancient Aliens, The Curse of Robert the Doll, and many, many more.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a six-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/bow_lake.
And we're back.
We are back with Headless. So I just want to say that I think it's interesting because I thought this entire story was literally like one of those old, I mean, it was in a way, an old made up story. Like I didn't realize at all that this was based on some actual events that happened, some actual places that happened and people. Now I know they were all kind of put together, but I mean, it's pretty terrifying to think that you could be stalked by this person who, you know, could throw their pumpkin head at you. Like, that's not a fun thing. You can't go around just throwing your pumpkin head at people.
Yeah. It's funny because you start realizing, okay, he really did know some of these characters. So Brom Van Brunt, you know, the fact that Ichabod fails in his wooing of the Van Tassel girl and all this. And so we've got some basis for this, right? We've got, there's an Irish myth of the Dullahan or Gan Cain. And those are basically Irish mythological creatures that are headless riders on a black horse.
Okay.
Right. And they gallop through the night with their head held high. And they might even be, you know, since we're doing mythical march, we kind of got to go back to the Celtic god of Crom Dubh. I hope I pronounced that right. From, he's around the 12th century, I think. And he's a a headless god, headless horseman on the back of a horse, and always has his head, even though it's removed, always has a grin that touches both sides, right? Now, this is not Jack O' the Lantern, so this is a different legend. And the head itself was the color of moldy cheese. So it was definitely a rotted head. And that's the one that I immediately think of when I
think of
this,
rotted right? cheese. That's your immediate thought when you
think that's, I think, was the one that probably inspired him the most. There is a Dutch legend that could have been, and there's also a German character I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name, but in the 19th century, there was a guy named, just the Headless Rider. We'll just say that's the German translation, because it's Spitzowa, I think. But anyway, that's a possible other thing. And one of the other people we also find along this is, he had also written Rip Van Winkle about this same time. And he was here in Tarrytown as a kid, but then in the late 1790s is when his family, or 1800s, early 1800s, his family basically went out of business because of the War of 1812. And so he didn't really have much writing prospects. That's when he goes to Birmingham, England. He's plagued by writer's block, but he writes, his first book was A History of New York, from the beginning of the New World to the end of the Dutch dynasty. And okay. So suddenly it hits unexpected success again. And that's when he starts to write his next book. And he even writes it under a pseudonym. And his pseudonym is Joffrey Crayon. And that's when he creates the legend of Sleepy Hollow. And it was the Sketchbook was the collection of short stories. And then, of course, it gets rave reviews, and it's five different short stories. And one of them is The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, and that becomes, and I love the book earned the title, The Best British Writer Produced by America.
Oh, I see how that is.
Yeah, sounds familiar, right? So, of course, we've got film adaptations. The first one was a 1922 silent film. And of course, we have many, many more. Most of us know 1999's Sleepy Hollow, Tim Burton, and of course the Disney classic. And of course, it was the TV series in 2013.
I have to say, I thought, of course, I'm madly in love with Tim Burton's version because Johnny Depp, Christina Ricci, Casper Van Dien. I thought the way that story was told was sufficiently creepy. But I loved the mythos of the sisters and the witchcraft and the, like kind of how this, it wasn't just this scary thing that shows up. It was all of the mythos of that he created based on these things of why it went in this direction, right? And what happened there.
There's one of the ones I loved was from 1980. They did a Legend of Sleepy Hollow television film. And I do not know what network it was for, but it starred Jeff Goldblum as Ichabod Crane, and Meg Foster, who I had a deep love for because of those eyes. She was Katarina von Tassel. But I remember the bad guy was Dick Butkus, the old football star who had turned into an actor. I most really remember him as Mongo in Blazing Saddles, right? He was Brom Bones. And that one lives rent-free in my head just because Jeff Goldblum as Ichabod was fantastic.
Yeah, but the TV series, I thought the way they did the TV series was so much fun. And it wasn't the Headless Horseman. It was more about the character of Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod Crane as a...
brought
as a,
forward in time.
Yeah, as a... he wasn't just the school teacher in that. He was... They went the way of the movie, where they had made him like an officer, a constable.
He was a lieutenant, because I loved it when he said lieutenant instead of lieutenant. He'd say lieutenant. And I absolutely loved that so much in my face. And I got to see him at Dragon Con, the actor who played him. That was a lot of fun. But I think, one of the things, like, I don't think that tale will ever go away. And I'm sure they'll remake it many times and not do the greatest job necessarily, but because Hollywood, there's lots of books out there. Reach out to me if you want them. What I think is very interesting is this whole scary things about somebody not having a head.
Right. It's
there's also headless Nick.
Headless Nick. And look at our guy. We did one in Creepy Florida about there's a pirate and they're going to hang him. And so instead of hanging him the night before, he decides to slice his own throat because he doesn't want the people to have the satisfaction of hanging him. But they rescue him and say, no, we're still hanging you. And so they stitched him back up. And then they hung him and, you know, pop goes the weasel because his head was pretty much sliced through.
We're going to hang you whether you like it or not.
Right, exactly. You can't kill yourself. You can't steal our fun.
Yeah, we're gonna do it.
So we're going to go back into Wayback Machine again because I'm going to take us to the other side. Well, not quite the other side of the country, but we're going to go way south. All right.
Okay. And
we're in the 1850.
Okay.
Okay, and we are in a wild land called Texas.
Texas.
All right.
Where is that place?
It is full of all kinds of thieves, murderers, outlaws, the settlers that are, you know, trying to build the area. And all the while they're being attacked by the natives, they're being attacked by other settlers. And the only thing that could protect them was this one group of people called the Texas Rangers.
Oh, yes, the Texas Rangers. They're still the Texas Rangers. They still exist.
Yep. And now to the south, there had been the declared border between the United States and Mexico was the Rio Grande River, right? Although Mexico refused to acknowledge the boundary, right? And they said the Nueces River, I believe, was actually it. So there's a bunch of land between the two rivers. And that became known as no man's land. That was where all the outlaws lived because we can hide here, right? It's, you know, America's not going to come in too much. And Mexico's afraid to, you know, go to full war, although it was coming, right? We knew that was going to happen. And finally, 1846, it did. And, you know, we had to go to war with Mexico. The Rio Grande became the de facto border. But it was another 30 years the Texas Rangers are just patrolling that area, constantly trying to protect it. Now, the Rangers are badasses, mm-hmm. right? They are not meant to be messed with. They are as crazy as they can be. And we're going to talk about two of these guys.
Okay. Which two?
The first one was a man named Creed Taylor.
Okay.
Now, Creed Taylor, at the age of 15... was already on his way to becoming one of the most famous men in Texas history. He had defended the cannon at Gonzales, Texas from the Mexican army. His unit had a flag that said, come and take it over the flag. So there was a siege of Bexar and he was part of that. And after the fall of the Alamo, he leads his own family to safety during a thing called the Runaway Scrape. So these are all big battles. And then he finally joins up with Sam Houston. There may be a town named after that guy. There may be some stuff named after that guy. And then he teams up with him, and he's part of the forces that helped defeat Santa Anna.
Oh, wow. Really?
Right. Now, the next guy is named William Alexander Anderson Wallace. But he has a nickname that we are all going to love. Ready?
I'm ready.
His nickname, Bigfoot Wallace.
Is that something about Texas. His shoe size?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of stories. He comes to Texas in 1830s to avenge the deaths of his brother and his cousin who had been killed at the Battle of Goliad. And he gets caught by the Mexicans and goes to a Mexican prison and becomes a Mexican prisoner. And they basically have to draw, this prison had a thing where you drew white beans and black beans because they couldn't afford to feed everybody. And if you drew a black bean, you were executed.
Oh, yikes. Oh, I don't like that option. No.
A white bean, you got dinner.
Oh.
And were able to eat that night. He drew a gray bean. And so they set him free.
Oh, wow.
So he also then goes on to fight several more battles for the war for Texas independence. And he's just got this really colorful, illustrious career, right? And he becomes a Texas Ranger, and he becomes one of the commanders of a Texas Ranger company.
Okay.
All right. So skirmishes are still going on daily, right? Comanche Raiders, Mexican, various banditos, and the Rangers are trying to provide law and order. So they're chasing murderers, desperados, horse thieves, and cattle rustlers, right? Now, cattle rustling was worse than murder out there, right? Because this is Texas. We need food to survive. If you kill a man, you're killing a man. But if you kill a cow, you've killed a dozen people, because basically that cow could have fed dozens.
Yeah.
So they are out and about doing their work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a Mexican group of banditos comes in and starts rustling some cattle near them, and actually manages to kill a couple of Creed's prize horses, as well as steal some of his cattle. Now, killing horses, that's also a hanging offense, because that's how you get around. It's your life. That's everything out there. So Creed comes home. He'd been chasing some Comanche raiders that had attacked his town. And when he comes back, finds this out, and he finds out that the bandito who stole a couple of his Mustangs, stole some of his cattle, and murdered a couple of his Mustangs was a man named Vidal.
And like, is it Vidal Sassoon?
As in, like, Gore Vidal or Vidal Sassoon. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I just made a fair analogy.
So he gets his, you know, a neighbor, another rancher by the name of Flores, and they start getting on the trail to find this guy. Now, out on the trail, they come across Bigfoot Wallace, who happens to be looking for a murderer in the area. And they're like, they tell him their story, and they're like, oh, we got to stop these guys. These guys have been causing all kinds of problems. We got to take this whole gang out, and we got to make sure they don't do anything ever again. So, and we need to make an example of these guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they track them for a few days and finally catch up to them. And these three men take on the whole gang and win somehow.
Oh, wow.
They massacre them to a man. Now, to not just gun them down, they go to Vidal and they decide, we're going to make an example of this guy. So they behead him.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
To make sure this isn't just a warning that is just here, they fix his sombrero to his head.
Ugh.
They put his body on a pony and make it so that he's tied to the saddle. So he's still sitting in the saddle, the body. They tie the head and hang it off the side so it would dangle there. And it's basically on this wild Mustang pony. And they send it off as a warning sign to everyone else in Texas, and just let it loose on the countryside, that if you see this headless man riding throughout sections of South Texas, you know,
I don't love that.
You know, don't mess with the Texas Rangers. You're going to end up like this guy. So because Texas is predominantly Spanish speaking at the time, people would see him and they would tell the story, and they would go, oh, that is El Muerto, the dead one.
I want to do this and send out a horse riding around like this, because, I mean, what are you going to say to that?
Right? Exactly. So stories start popping up everywhere about the headless rider, usually seen somewhere in the middle of nowhere with its sombreroed head swinging back and forth as it gallops along. More and more cowboys spot it and, not knowing what it is, riddle it with bullets. Right?
Like you do.
But the horse and rider just keep going because they don't realize he's already dead. And that makes the legend grow. So the El Muertos story becomes huge. And so the South Texas brush country becomes this place to avoid because El Muerto is causing all kinds of misfortune and evil. The land is cursed. It's working because it's keeping the bandits away. It's keeping everybody away.
Wow.
Finally, at one point, a posse of local ranchers captured the pony at a local watering hole. And it's actually near the town of Alice, Texas. Now, there was a little community there called Ben Bolt, supposedly is where they found it. And still strapped to its back was the dried up corpse of Vidal. And he's got bullet holes. He's got Indian arrows sticking in him. He's got
the body. My gosh.
Was just riddled. So they buried him in an unmarked grave near there. And the horse was set free. Finally free of its, you know, grisly burden there. Now, you think that'd be the end of El Muerto.
Did I?
Right? That would be the end.
I didn't think that would be the end, knowing our stories. But yes, you would think that if you were a part of this podcast.
So travelers and ranchers in the area of no man's land between the two rivers reportedly continued to see El Muerto almost as an apparition traveling all the way till 1917. A couple traveling by covered wagon to San Diego, Texas. They camped for the night outside town. And they said that as they sat by the campfire, a large gray stallion sped by them with a headless man. And they could hear him shouting, "It's mine! It's all mine!"
Wow.
And now we go to 1969.
Oh, my back machine travel.
Yeah, this time we've gone a little forward. And it was seen again near the town of Freer, Texas. And this time it was galloping along. And again, they heard the, "It's mine. It's mine." So what is it? Who knows? Hasn't been seen since, as far as I know. But pretty crazy story. And nice to know that the legend of Sleepy Hollow traveled south.
Yes.
El Muerto. The dead one.
Oh my gosh. That is amazing.
So we had Hessians. We've had Mexican bandidos. We've had all the whole gamut here.
And I think, you know, it's interesting that every time somebody's like, "We're going to send a message to our enemies, we're going to put heads on spikes." Like, it's always take the heads and put the heads around, and that will scare people off. Like, no matter what we're looking at, it's take the heads, put the heads out there, right?
Yeah.
That'll be terrifying. Out of curiosity, Mark, who is your favorite player in the legend of the Headless Horseman?
Now, see, I think it's fun because depending on your take on the story, is it a real monster that does in poor Ichabod Crane? Is it Brom Bones that does it, you know, or Bron Brunt, depending on which version, you know, we're talking about here? Is it him in a costume that does it? I love the Tim Burton version where it's a real nice twist to it. And of course, that version is lives deep in my heart. But I think little Katrina Van Tassel is just such a fun character in the stories because she's, you know, she's an object to be wooed and won, but she's her own thing. She's not swayed by the teacher's, "Hey, I got money. I got land. I got this." And she's not swayed by the bully. She kind of does her own thing. I think that's cool. That's something you don't get in the stories of the time.
It's very true. She does not go for the Gaston. And she also doesn't have Stockholm Syndrome, which is a whole other topic, which we're not going to talk about today. I think it's fascinating. So before we get into the thing we need to wrap with today, what are our travels for the day? Would you recommend?
Oh my gosh, there's so many places to go. So of course you can go to Sleepy Hollow, which is definitely a must do. Again, like visiting Mothman during Mothman Festival, like visiting Salem during Halloween. If you go to Sleepy Hollow during the fall, it is going to be very, very busy, and just be ready for that and, you know, book your trips in advance. There is a Legend of Sleepy Hollow haunted house, which is actually not in Sleepy Hollow, but not too far away. And you can go visit that. And that is also an amazing place to visit. I would highly recommend either of those. And there are there are tours that will walk you the path of Ichabod Crane. And there's some that are, there are even Washington Irving tours that lead you through Rip Van Winkle and some of his other stories. So that would be places I would highly recommend to go visit. And where they filmed the actual Tim Burton movie has a couple of places that are still there historically. And I'll pull that up while you tell me what's your favorite part of Sleepy Hollow.
So I have to say, I mean, I love the overall story. I love how terrified Ichabod Crane is constantly. And that's one of my favorite parts of this, is he's not the gallant hero. He's just swept up in this situation. Regardless of which story you go by, he is swept up in this situation and has to sort of make the best of it, right? I think I do enjoy myself in Ichabod because I feel like he's the underdog and he comes, you know, through on this. You know, Travelers, who is your favorite part of Sleepy Hollow? And were you on the, this was really cool, or did it scare the crap out of you? Because there are some scare the crap out of you scenes in the these movies, except for the Disney one. It's not, I don't know, it's a little scary.
For 1949, that one was pretty creepy. And it was. The artwork on that is amazing. And of course, you got the wonderful Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
Now, it was, they did film in Tarrytown in October 1998. I just found out. So
very cool. And
in
then
the historic Hudson Valley.
So I think that one of the things that we need to talk about, so that's Sleepy Hollow. We're going to have a bunch of links. We'll have links to these movies, stuff like that. You can check out all the different versions and definitely share with us your favorites. We would love to hear it. But there is sort of a big event coming up here shortly for some people, and we just thought we'd do a little thing on it, which is we have an eclipse coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got that coming up April the 8th, the total eclipse coming across the United States.
So just a minor thing. We'll cover it again in some more of our episodes coming up. But
make your plans now. I mean,
and get glasses so that if you're looking at this, you do not damage your eyes.
They're going to be impossible to get in a week. You know, yes. So get them now. And also travel. Remember, there's going to be traffic jams because this is one of those total eclipses. Now, we've had a few of those in the last few years, but it's been a while. Most people haven't been in totality, right? There is a big difference between 99% and 100% in an eclipse, too.
Yeah.
And so if you're in one of those areas, we're 98%, we're 97%, or that's still going to be an epic event for you. But drive that extra hour a little further north or a little further west or whatever it takes, because it makes all the difference. We're making our plans as well right now because it's literally only a few hours from our location. So we are super excited to do that. Back on Sleepy Hollow, one last thing I forgot to mention. When we got to meet the wonderful star, Casper Van Dien, we talked to him about some paranormal things. We're hopefully going to get him on the show at some point. But he talked about one of his proudest days of filming was he was given that ancient musket that was an actual ancient musket from the 1700s to take the shot. And he was ride forth, stop, and take the shot at this small bullseye right next to the camera. And he did it on the first take, even having a busted shoulder from a fall. And he was so proud of that moment. Then Tim asked him to do it again. And he was already terrified because he was afraid the gun was going to explode, you know, because it was this ancient antique musket, but it had been taken such good care of. He thought it was such an honor to be able to fire that gun alone and then to do it in this. And he was able to do it again and do the same shot again. So Casper, bravo. It is an amazing bit of film.
Yes, agreed, agreed. And I loved him in that role. So hopefully we can get him on to tell him some of his paranormal stories. But
yes.
Mark, with that, take us away, my friend.
All right. Well, travelers, thank you so much for joining us as always. And hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you, new listeners. And Thank you, as always, to our returning folks. Those of you who've been following us on Patreon, we've had our book club. We've had a couple other fun things we've been doing. So patrons, thank you so much for all you do to help support us. And if you would like to help support the show, go to erietravels.com and click on the little Patreon link. And a couple bucks a month gets you access to the Discord. And if you can pay a little more, you get a little bit of extra stuff. And some people have been sharing those on social media, so we have a lot of fun with that. And I'm not sure what else to say, but we know the spring is coming. Spring is in the air. The fall is going away. The last of winter fades into the darkness. And as you're riding along on those lonely roads at night, and the chill breeze does still come along, and you hear a galloping hoof, and you might look back over your shoulder to see something coming, a shadowy figure, perhaps a headless horseman. Just be careful if it shouts, "It's mine, it's mine." And we will see you on the other side.